Welcome to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB, keeping levypayers informed and at the heart of the conversation.
Hello and welcome to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB. I'm Alice Perry from the Media Relations team, and this episode follows the recent AgriLeader Forum event in Manchester. Manchester is known as a city that bands together and innovates, so it was an appropriate venue for the forum, which is all about collaboration, creativity and networking. Almost 200 individuals from the farming industry gathered, all different ages, backgrounds, sectors and nationalities. I met farmers, farm event managers, communication specialists, educators and food service workers. It was so diverse and everyone was so positive and engaged throughout the whole conference. We heard from industry professionals such as Meat Businesswomen founder Laura Ryan and farmer Phil Halhead, but also from those outside the industry like business coach Marcus Child. I was particularly interested to talk to Dr. Stephanie Fitzgerald and hear her presentation. This episode is coming to you on International Day of Women and Girls in Science, and Stephanie is a chartered clinical psychologist and neuropsychologist, as well as a keynote speaker and author. I got her thoughts on some of the key issues of today. Mental health can be a scary subject for some, and sometimes it's hard to know where to start. Will I sleep better if I exercise? Or will I have more energy to exercise if I sleep better? I began by asking Stephanie this.
Your health is your health. So your physical health, your mental health are governed by the brain. How you feel physically is going to affect how you feel mentally. And so for me, the important thing would be to focus on what's making you feel good. So there are basic foundations of good physical health that also will really impact your mental health, which are eating, sleeping, and exercise. So if you haven't got much time, I would choose prioritizing sleep first and foremost. That has the biggest impact. So focus on your sleep. When you're sleeping better and you're into a better sleep hygiene, sleep pattern, you're going to have more energy to focus on food and exercise. When you've got your foundations, your eating, your sleeping, your exercise down, your mental health is going to, there's sort of the really good foundations for mental health. You're going to feel in a better place to start with some of the more specific mental health activities. So that could be meditating, it could be journaling, it could be going for a walk, it could be doing whatever it is that's making you feel good. But the key thing is to keep checking in, because we can almost give ourselves a to-do list for our health. So I, you know, eat healthy food, I walk my dogs, I journal, I've got a gratitude jar and I download all the apps, and it starts to just become this overwhelming pressure. And actually, it's the fundamentals. You can have all the gratitude jars in the world. If you're not eating well, sleeping well and exercising, they're pointless. So start with the foundations. Mm.
It's a bit ironic, isn't it, that the sheer amount of things we can do physically and mentally for our health can almost have the reverse effect if it turns into this unmanageable thing. What have you noticed about sort of generational differences in attitudes towards well-being? I suppose I'm thinking of mental health more than physical health there, but there may be overlap.
Yeah, I think there's definitely generational differences in that younger generations are much more happy and willing to talk about their mental health. So that's a big change. I would say that's changing. I think attitudes generally towards mental health have shifted across all generations. So I work with clients, you know, up until their 90s. Like, there's no sort of a barrier necessarily with age and talking about mental health. But I think one thing I've really noticed in the workplace is younger people are less willing to put up with things that damage their mental health. So whereas, you know, certainly working in healthcare in my 20s, there was almost a rite of passage that your work was just really, really darn hard and you would just struggle. And there was almost this, that's just the way it is. Whereas I see, you know, you look at the junior doctor strikes, you look at they're just not tolerating it as much. So I do think there's that generational difference in that younger generations just won't tolerate things that are damaging their mental health in a way that I wish older generations had had that courage and confidence when they were younger.
Farming is still largely a sort of male-dominated industry. What challenges do you think that sort of presents in terms of managing mental health and men's attitudes towards it?
So I have this issue with the idea that men don't want to talk about their mental health, because men do want to talk about mental health, but we tell them men don't want to talk about it. So then if you are a man and you do want to talk about your mental health, you've had the permission taken away from you. And that then leads to challenges where people don't, for example, seek help. We have jokes in society that men never go to the doctors. So again, if you are a man and you were thinking of going to the doctors, you're almost being told, well, you shouldn't somehow. So for me, I think male-dominated industries actually, rather than seeing them as a challenge for mental health, there lies the greatest opportunity to break some of those myths, get rid of some of the stereotypes, and just say, actually, we're talking about health and how we can thrive and how we can perform and how we can look after ourselves. So we wouldn't feel any shame for our physical health. We'd admire that. So it's the same for your mental health. So for me, male-dominated industries are actually the most exciting. Most of my work is in male-dominated industries for exactly that reason, because I go in and they say, oh, no, they won't talk to you. Men don't want to talk about their mental health. And I'm like, they do. You just need to give them that permission and opportunity.
They want to. They just don't know how or
exactly
think they're not
that.
Supposed to.
Oh, no one's ever asked. No one's ever asked, because they've assumed, oh, men don't want to talk about that, so they've never started the conversation. The second you start, honestly, it's like the floodgates open. Mm.
Psychologist Dr. Stephanie Fitzgerald there talking about some of the key mental health issues of today. Stephanie isn't from a farming background, and her presentation wasn't tailored to farming. But it didn't matter at all, because these are things that affect people everywhere. Now, we've covered time pressures, generational differences, and attitudes towards male mental health, but what about women's? Men still make up the majority of farm workers, and I wondered how Stephanie thought this could affect the mindset of the comparatively few women in the industry. Whether you're dealing with sexist behaviour or harassment in the workplace, or you're simply the only woman working on a farm?
You know, as I mentioned, a lot of my career has been in male-dominated industries, and I think there are two emotions that no one really talks about when you're the only female at work is we're tired and we're angry. And I think sometimes those two, when I talked about burnout yesterday, I was talking about actually rage is the part of burnout no one really talks about. But if you talk to women who have grown up with and experienced sexism, derogatory remarks, being put down, being asked to speak to a male supervisor even though you are the most qualified and senior person in your company, but everyone looks to a male opinion, etc. We get tired and we get angry. And what I would say, and I said yesterday, was anger is a high emotion, high energy emotion. So actually, when you've got a high energy emotion, you can re-harness that energy into something positive. So rather than being angry at the world, you can channel that energy into, first and foremost, protecting yourself. Because if you're going to an environment every day that you're finding challenging, of course, that's going to impact you. So you need to use that energy to protect yourself. But also changing and holding really strong boundaries with others. So you can't ask someone who's very sexist to change their views and become very, you know, open-minded and realize the error of their ways. They may never do that, but you can not tolerate sexist remarks in the workplace. You can say to someone, my boundary is I won't be spoken to like that. My boundary is I'm not going to continue to communicate with you if you speak to me in a derogatory manner. So when you have your boundary of what's acceptable, it doesn't matter if people around you are acting unacceptably, because you just won't engage with them until they meet your boundary. Easier said than done. Takes quite a bit of confidence and a bit of courage, but it's worth it, because that changes how people are interacting with you.
We are putting this out on International Day of Women and Girls in Science. Do you have any thoughts on the situation for women in science, progress that's been made, advice for perhaps budding female scientists who have concerns about getting into that industry? And if you're happy to talk about it, what's your experience been?
Yes, I definitely, for anyone who's interested in branching into it, I really recommend building your network. And of course, that's been the theme of this whole conference, but really seeking others. I can remember, so when I was training to do my job, all my supervisors were male. When I'd go into corporate roles, I always look at the board. And if the board is all male, I would question whether or not I would engage or take a job in that company, because you can't be what you can't see. And so if they say we have 50-50 gender split, but all the women are in administration roles and all the senior leaders are men, that's telling you what that split is. So for me, I think build your network, find inspirational women, find mentors and people who are willing to talk about their journey, people who will connect you with opportunities, really surrounding yourself. Like, I'm so blessed to have such a phenomenal tribe of powerhouse women around me that inspire me, promote me, recommend me. You know, I really use my network and I make sure that I do the same back for them. So it's a really reciprocal relationship. So for me, I think making sure that you find those people who are in the situations you want to be in and the roles that you aspire to and asking them, how did you do this? Is really, really helpful, and it gives you hope, actually. It gives you hope, like, actually, if they did it, I can do it. So absolutely, look for those women everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if you look around you and you just don't see the opportunities or examples of people doing what you're doing, it's really difficult to have that vision in your head of yourself, and it must be very sort of off-putting, or you must knock your confidence.
Yes,
if you feel like, if you not that you think you can't do something, but you look at something and think, I don't know how to do this.
Even if you look at something like the Lionesses, you know, we're at the Football Museum last night. If you look at the Lionesses, I can remember being told at school, well, girls play netball. Mm. And I remember saying to a teacher, oh, I'd like to play football, because one of my neighbours was a little boy that was playing in the football team. And I said, well, he's my friend, can I play football? And I was told girls don't play football. So I went and played netball and the boys played football. I don't think that would happen now. I'd like to think that wouldn't happen now.
Hopefully not. Although I think my sister was told the same thing. Girls don't play football. And she's not not that much older than me. That must have been back in the sort of mid-90s, I should think.
Yeah.
What were your highlights from the conference? Can you pick sort of three main takeaways?
Yeah, so definitely the passion. I really liked the rose thorn bud exercise, talking about something that, you know, you're already doing that's blooming, that you love, something that you're facing a challenge with, and something that is waiting to be developed. And everyone I spoke to had a bud, had an ambition, had mm-hmm. something really positive that they were looking forward to. So that, definitely. I loved that energy and that drive. I think just the sense of connection and community is really powerful within the farming industry, so that really shone out through here. And I think I really liked, and I've always liked the idea of mood boards and pictures and visualising where you want to go, so Marcus's talk really underlined that for me. So,
do you have a rose, a bird and a thorn?
So my rose currently, I would say, is doing things like this, so doing keynotes and spreading knowledge and engaging with great groups of people. I love that. My bud at the moment is I'm working on my next book, so that's going to be book number 5. And my thorn, I tend not to focus on the thorns. I know they're there, but I can remember having an actual thorn in my thumb once, and the skin grew over it, and it was almost like it toughened up. And I remember thinking, like, okay, sometimes the things that hurt toughen you up and you move forward with them. So, I like to think they're probably there, but I like to think I'm moving past them.
Fantastic. You mentioned your book there. If people are interested in reading that and finding out more about you and what you do, where can they find it and where can they find you? I would assume you're on social media.
Yes, so I am on social media. So if people want to know a bit more about workplace wellbeing, then Instagram, I'm at workplace_wellbeing. If people want to know a bit more about books and writing, on Twitter, or X as it is now, I keep forgetting, at Steph Fitz Writes. Everything's on my website, which is soyolimited.com. And the book is Reworked, Putting Health and Happiness at the Centre of Your Career, and it's anywhere you get your books, so Amazon, local bookshop, wherever.
That was psychologist Dr. Stephanie Fitzgerald talking to me at the AgriLeader Forum event in Manchester about how to stay mentally and physically healthy. I think we could have talked all day about these topics, but as you'll have guessed from the sounds of the stage being dismantled in the background, we were about to get kicked out of the venue. Well, that's about it from me for this episode. I hope you've enjoyed listening, and if you'd like any further information about AHDB or the AgriLeader programme, you can head to the website ahdb.org.uk. You can also register your interest for next year's forum. I'm Alice Perry. Thank you for listening.
If you have any comments about this podcast or have ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk.